So Shane, it is a large program that you've introduced. As you mentioned, it has lasted over 6 years. What did you change first? And I suppose, where did you start to see the improvements? How did they manifest, I suppose, within the organisation?
Well, look, I mean, and this is about breakout. The thing we focused on first was the individual in the organisation and just how and who each of us is. And that, in one sense, was the core of the breakout program. What was also going on at the same time, though, was sort of just the blocking and tackling around business as well. So at the time, for those that can remember, ANZ through the 90s, it had a pretty tough run. A number of the banks had. And so we were doing some of the sort of the hard edge stuff as well around de-risking the business, around making sure our cost structure was right. But the cultural bit was a critical part of all of that. You can't just sort of do that hardwired stuff and leave the culture as it was. Otherwise, you just end up repeating history again. And so what we saw changing in all of that, certainly staff engagement shifted significantly and rose significantly. We started off measuring satisfaction and ended up with an 87% satisfaction level. We thought, look, we need to put this tougher bar on, so we moved to an engagement measure, which is tougher. But then the other thing that we saw occurring was our customer satisfaction started to shift and really see daylight between ourselves and our other major banks. And literally, there's a great chart I've got which shows the sort of daylight appear from about 2001 with the other banks. And particularly in the retail network, it's when we took Breakout and a program called Restoring Customer Faith into the branch network. And it seemed that when we said to people working in branches that actually customer and branches are important, they almost seem to say to us, you ninnies, we always knew that. And with, you know, just very clear messages and alignment, that was the other pleasing thing. I think the whole customer satisfaction measure has really taken off since then.
Graham Gosling, Human Resources Manager for Tees Proprietary Limited, doing major construction. You mentioned your 20-70-10 breakup, which seems in some sense to reflect the Jack Welch model from GE, which was the 10-80-10. He sacked the bottom 10%. What do you do?
Yeah, no, that's it's interesting. You have a conversation like this and people think, oh, it all sounds very soft. We sacked the bottom 5. So that's a standards issue. And all of us, I think, have a very intuitive sense when we work in an organisation just who's lifting weight and who isn't. So we've got processes that make sure we don't capriciously get after the bottom 5% and sack them. But one of my measures that I have as the head of people, capital and breakout is that we have exited the bottom 5%. And that itself is a standard-setting thing. But people in the organisation look for that to be clear and that we've got clear standards around performance. So we don't do 10, but we do 5. And I'm measured on it.
Oh, Shane Carmel Sussage from the Australian Tax Office.
Oh, no.
Don't hold that against me. It's not process-driven, this question.
Hi, Carmel.
My question is fairly simple. I didn't want to leave today without knowing the secrets of happiness that...
I love it. Well, look, I mean, we're all wired quite differently and I wouldn't want to tell you what mine are, but the three themselves that... there were three secrets of happiness that if you went to this workshop last week and you'll just tick these off for yourself and you'll sort of think, actually, I think I heard that from my grandmother. The first one is reflect on a daily basis, at the end of each day, reflect on three good things that have happened to you through the day. If you've got a partner, talk about them. It's a pretty interesting one, isn't it? The second one was about finding a purpose for yourself. I mean, being very clear for yourself, just in terms of what is it that I actually want to achieve. So having a clear goal or mission for yourself is important. The third one is actually beyond yourself. What is it that you're trying to achieve? If you were to describe what your own footprint was beyond yourself, what is it and who does it affect and impact? So that's, in one sense, it's a broader giving or inclusion piece. I mean, my own purpose is important, but do I have a purpose that extends beyond me and positively impacts others? It was very well presented. It was quite an engaging session. It was good. I love boating as well. My yacht's sort of probably my biggest happiness.
Hi, Shane. Thanks very much for the opportunity to ask a question. Rose Redpath-Nixon from Orange Business Services. We're, I think, one of your suppliers. Lucky one of your suppliers.
Thank you.
My question is, I'm just very interested to hear about, I guess, the sort of strategies that you deploy with your managers to make them true people managers and role models that can really stimulate the engagement of the staff that are working with them in the team environment.
It's a great question because, you know, I often say it all starts and stops with leadership. And most of what we pick up in leadership is not in the classroom. Most of what we pick up that is both good and bad in leadership occurs day by day in how it is we experience often our bosses. And I just often challenge people with the question, how many extraordinary bosses have you had in your life? And everyone's sort of looking around and thinking, oh, has he got an easier question? But for most of us, it's not many. It's two or three. And they're often people that we use as our role models, and we say, look, I'd like to incorporate that in the way I am as a leader because I know that made me either more effective or very positive about how I am. A second question I often ask is, well, because we often think about leadership as this referred thing, so how many great bosses have you had? That's interesting. That's an interesting question. But how many people would count you as an extraordinary leader in their lives? I think is probably the sort of killer questions for each of us. So there is something about making sure we have the right people in the right jobs because that leadership example is probably the strongest thing that in one sense patterns behaviours. You can't hope to redress that through training if you just continue to put poor leaders in roles.
Ian Ferris, Trescox Lawyers. Shane, I was intrigued given ANZ's reputation the last few years in this area and some of the explanations you've given about breakout. I expected your number to be higher than 62. I just wondered where you would think you might aim to have it in the next two or three years and what might help achieve that.
So we've we have a group called the Chief Executives Group. It's a group of about 70 people. This time last year, we set ourselves a target for 80% as our engagement score, and that was over a three-year period. Look, I agree. I hear 62 as a number. You sort of say, could 38% of people not check those boxes? But it does come down to leadership. I'll sort of go back to my other question. So what are we doing about that? We pay enormous attention to leadership. At John McFarlane's top team, each quarter we have a full session around leadership, our leadership bench. We have real conversations about who our current effective leaders are and who our future leaders are as well. It's not got, you know, I mean, breakout's great, we can have big events, but people need to be able to go back from those big events into their workplace and feel enlivened by the jobs that they do and the relationships that they have with their peers and with their bosses in particular. So the focus on leadership is huge. We're just kicking off a program called Breakout Engage, which is really focused on providing leaders with some tools around having these very different conversations. And if you think about your own best experience with your best bosses, I wouldn't mind betting that most of those conversations that you had with them had little to do with the formal performance management system, you know, as a result of a 360 or as a reward outcome. Somehow those conversations are in the moment and they're real. They're of quite a different texture. So leadership, we think, is the key. We have set ourselves a target. We're very metrics-driven as a bank. And we're hoping to see just continued improvement. It's lifting all the time. We're just a little anxious that it continues to improve.
As good leaders, you're not driven by incentives, and clearly good leaders are not driven by incentives. So what's the future of incentives as you see it with top leadership?
Well, look, I think it's I'm swimming against the tide in the answer to this. But it would be interesting just to sort of have this conversation 10 years out. Because the way I describe the process around incentives is pretty much how it is. If you look at annual reports and you look at the remuneration reports and you try and correlate rewards with company performance, good luck. The correlation ain't strong. And you know, governance bodies are in trying to sort of draw the parallels between these things, but it's not apparent from our past behaviours that there is a strong linkage between incentives received and business performance. So where's all that potentially take us? Essentially, on base pay, which generally for most of us represents most of what it is we earn, we don't touch that. We have a go at a smaller portion, which is called short-term incentives. And I could be completely wrong with this, but I have a sense in some years to come that we'll move away from the notion of variable pay and pay for presumed performance and move more to a total pay concept. And a total pay concept, I think, might actually force some real conversations. If I know I'm staring in the face the prospect of paying you, Peter, this total amount here, and I'm choking on it because your performance is poor, I'm more likely to have a conversation with you than, in one sense, waiting to the end of the year and feathering your pay outcome because I want to send you a message. So I'm not sure. This is one of those sacred cows. It's been baked into our governance system. It's got, people might disagree with this, but variable pay has got more downside to it than it's got upside. I'm just wondering how many people really, in one sense, are motivated by pay. The higher probability is something's happened that has led you to be demotivated by it, but rarely motivated by it. It's a hygiene factor.
Hi, Nolene Carey from KPMG. A lot of corporations are spending a lot of money on becoming employers of choice. What's your thoughts on the values of being an employer of choice? Especially considering a lot of people are saying now it really doesn't have that much influence in the recruitment process.
No, I disagree. I think your employment brand is absolutely critical. I mean, it's like your customer brand. People will choose a competitor's brand if what the brand stands for resonates with what they themselves identify with. So no, we invest a lot of time in all the things I've talked about. They cost a bit of money, but they're choices that we make because we think at the end of the day, it does both add to our employment brand. But in one sense, it also creates this quite different environment, which, you know, is typically just called work. So we just see huge spin-offs from it. So, no, we're big employment brand junkies.